This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, April 9th, 2021 on your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Ahead, how legislation passed in Little Rock could have an effect on tourism throughout the state. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek concludes her reporting on bills regarding transgendered Arkansans and calls for boycotts of events scheduled for Northwest Arkansas. In our second half hour, Becca Martin Brown, the features editor for the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, explains live music is continuing to come back with limited seating, social distancing, and at various locations. After our show on Science Friday on KUAF, up to a third of people who get COVID-19 are left with chronic health effects. The life of a COVID long hauler is frustrating, but treatment may be possible. Plus, a daring giraffe rescue in Western Kenya puts the spotlight on the silent extinction of this charismatic animal. We'll hear more from 1 to 3 today on Science Friday. The Arkansas Department of Health reports 199 new cases of COVID-19 in the most recent testing period, and the ADH is adding 2 deaths to the state's fatalities from the virus. Hospitalizations dropped by 9 patients in the most recent 24 hours. There are 18 more active cases in the state than this time 24 hours ago. The assistant principal of Lakeside Junior High in Springdale is being honored as the National Assistant Principal of the Year by the National Association of Secondary School Principals. Chelsea Jennings has led an initiative at the school to make trauma-informed social-emotional learning interventions and resources available for every adult and student. The Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation is providing financial help to stabilize the bank along Cave Creek in Newton County to help prevent loss of quality of elk habitat on a portion of the Gene Rush Wildlife Management Area. The foundation, based in Montana, is also providing financial resources to the state of Arkansas for the Arkansas Youth Hunter Education Challenge, a program designed to help Arkansans 18 and under improve hunting skills. The John Brown University women's soccer team is in possession of the 2020 Sooner Athletic Tournament Championship Trophy. JBU defeated Science and Arts 5-1 last night in Siloam Springs to claim the 2020 tournament. The tournament had been delayed from last autumn because of COVID-19. JBU will find out who their opponent is in the opening round of the NAIA National Soccer Tournament Monday morning. This is Ozarks at Large. Thanks for being with us on this Friday. With me on the phone from his office in Fort Smith is Michael Tilley, who is with Talk Business and Politics. Thanks for joining us again this Friday, Michael.
Hey, well, as always, thanks for having me. It seemed to get more and more feedback on the interview we do, positive feedback, believe it or not. So enjoy the time.
We're going to get some feedback eventually about this pilot training center that's going to be located somewhere in the United States, perhaps in Fort Smith. And the latest feedback we have is that it will be decided by the military and not by politicians. What more do we know?
Well, hopefully that is the case. You know, before the November election, one of the things I was hearing, well, let me back up a little bit. This foreign military sales program, which is something I had not heard of until this process began back in July. But the U.S. allows U.S.-based military providers, the defense industry, to sell certain military products to foreign countries. In this case, Singapore, which uses F-16s and has bought some of the F-35s, the expensive $100 million fighter planes, and what they do is they train the pilots in the U.S. They create a pilot training center. Well, that has been kind of all over the map, so to speak. In fact, literally in some cases, in past years, in the Department of Defense, the Air Force specifically said, we're going to consolidate all of this at one base. And so Fort Smith, the Ebbing Air Force Base in Fort Smith, was one of 5 finalists. We've been told that it's been narrowed down to 3 finalists, but I can't get confirmation from the Air Force or Arkansas congressional delegation on that, which brings us to why we did this story before the election, before Trump lost the election. It was, there was some scuttlebutt that one of the sites, which is Holman Field in Indiana, was really at the top of the list because Vice President Mike Pence's home state. And there was some thinking that the administration was going to try to tip the scales in that favor. Trump obviously lost the election. Then there was some concern, and I even heard it from some of the folks that are in the military, that, you know, with Arkansas's congressional delegation being so vocally opposed to Biden, you know, you had Senator Tom Cotton making a very public point of opposing some of Biden's cabinet picks. You had Representative Crawford from over in East Arkansas that voted with the group that voted to reject, you know, the Electoral College vote. So there was some concern that such an anti-Biden congressional delegation may not put Arkansas and Fort Smith in a good light. So I talked to former Air Force Secretary Deborah James. She was Air Force Secretary under President Barack Obama. And I talked to David Olive. Olive used to live in Fort Smith, and he was chief of staff when Asa Hutchinson, who's now the Arkansas governor. But I think a lot of Arkansans remember that the governor was the third district congressman for several years. And David Olive was his first chief of staff when he went to D.C. And since then, David has built up over 20, 25, maybe 30 years now, working as a defense industry lobbyist and an analyst. He knows a lot of the players. He's seen how it works. Secretary James and David were pretty adamant in that it won't be politics, that it will be military judgment, because when politics gets thrown into it, it really messes everything up. It causes follow-up investigation. It delays the process. Mm-hmm. And nobody wants that. And they gave an example. There was a decision that was made prior to Trump leaving office about where to put the Space Command, the U.S. Space Command. Everyone thought it was going to go to Peterson Air Force Base because that's where most of the assets and most of the people were already based who were going to be brought into the Space Force Command. Well, then Secretary of the Air Force Barbara Barrett was summoned to a White House meeting. And a few days after that, she made the decision that the base was going to be located in Huntsville, Alabama, which is a city in the district of Representative Mo Brooks. And Mo Brooks is a very ardent supporter of President Trump, was at the time. Well, sure enough, that decision is now under investigation by an inspector general in the Department of Defense. It slowed up the whole process, and it's left that whole Space Force Command in limbo. And that's Secretary James, when I talked to her, her quote was, "That's exactly what you don't want to have happen." So I guess the point is both her and David Olive are confident that the Biden administration is just going to let the Department of Defense use its what they call military judgment and make this decision based on what's best for that mission. So we hope, or we'll see if that's the case. That decision could come, Kyle, that could come tomorrow. It could come as late as July. We're all just kind of waiting on it.
We don't have to wait for the latest building permit numbers from Fort Smith. They're out. I don't think it's a surprise that they're down, because we kept being kind of surprised at how they were up in 2020. Is it a surprise to you that the numbers are down?
No, it's not a surprise. No, first, this is for the first quarter of the year. And remember, the first quarter of 2020, we weren't fully involved in the pandemic yet. Although that seems like it's 10 years ago. But also keep in mind, there was still some permitting going on related to the school projects, which were tied, of course, to that $100-something million millage package to improve the facilities in the school system. But for the first quarter of 2020, the permit values is just under $20 million, $19.87 million. That's down about 13% from, that's the March number. That's down about 13% from February and down about almost 56% from March 2020. And the year-to-date permit tallies $64.2 million, down a little over 38% from the $104 million in 2020. Some of the best anecdotal evidence that we've heard so far is, one, is you're up against tough comparisons
right
in 2020 when you had all the permit activity. there was so much activity in 2020 that, you know, people are kind of taking a breather. And second of all, you had a February, or another point was we had some pretty tough weather in February. That pushed a lot of projects forward. And then another thing we're hearing is that building material prices are rising and spiking, and some folks may be holding off on building their project or permitting it to see if some of those prices will come back down. To be honest with you, I was expecting somewhat of a drop in the permit values for the first quarter. I was not expecting an almost 40% drop.
All right. In the time we have left, good news if you're the U.S. Marshals Museum, as you have raised nearly $39 million. Challenging news, you still have a little bit more than $12 million to raise, including $8 million you want to raise to put artifacts up and exhibits up. And so now a fundraising firm has been hired to help get over the final hump.
Yeah. And look, I'll just be frank, this is still very frustrating. I mean, this has been going on since, well, I think this is going to be close to 15 years, maybe 14 years. 6 months ago, a little over 6 months ago, they were at $12.8 million that they needed to raise. Now they're at $12.6 million. That's just $200,000. I say just $200,000. Yeah. But for a project like this, you would expect a little bit more movement on that. Hope for a little more movement anyway. But they've hired a company out of Minneapolis, Bent Swaley and Flessner BWF. They're paying them a little over $45,000 that hopefully can help them raise $8 million. Like I said, they've got about $12.6 million they need to raise to reach their capital goal. But if they can raise $8 million, they can build out the exhibits and fully open the Marshals Museum by spring or summer of next year, which, you know, I think was supposed to have been open 3 or 4 years ago. And so we keep moving that date. That's what's frustrating about this. So let's hope that these campaign consultants can really bring it in. But this is just, you know, this project really launched back in 2007, 2008, with a lot of promise, a lot of excitement, a lot of expectations that they were going to be able to raise the money quickly and get the museum built. Well, they've got it built. It's a great looking facility from the road, but it's just an empty shell for the most part. So hopefully they will be able to do what they haven't been able to do in the past several years and get the money raised quickly, get the project finished.
If you can get the bulk of $8 million from someone you're paying $42,000, that's pretty good.
Yeah, look, that's a good deal.
Yeah.
And if they do it, I guess maybe the question is why they didn't do it sooner. But let's just hope they get it turned and get the project going, and we can all be out there in spring or summer of 2022 cutting ribbons and drinking lemonade or whatever.
Or whatever. Michael Tilley is with Talk Business and Politics. You can find out about what we've talked about and so much more at talkbusiness.net. We will talk to you next Friday, Michael.
All right. Hey, go Hogs.
Go Hogs. That's right.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
This is Ozarks at Large. A new law will make diagnostic breast cancer exams more affordable for Arkansans. Senate Bill 290, now known as Act 553, was sponsored by Senator Greg Letting, a Democrat from Fayetteville. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
Women across the country can access free preventative screening mammograms, including here in Arkansas. But about 12% will need follow-up imaging, such as a diagnostic mammogram, ultrasound, or MRI. Lauren Marquette, Senior Regional Manager for State Policy and Advocacy at Susan G. Komen, says many women skip that follow-up appointment because they can't afford it.
They come in and their screening mammograms is covered because of the Affordable Care Act as an essential benefit, but then something's found or something looks suspicious and they need further testing, and it could be upwards of, you know, $1,200 out of pocket for that. And women aren't prepared. And even, you know, diagnostic mammograms is out of pocket until you hit your deductible. So, you know, you say like mammograms are essential benefits, but as are the screening mammograms, not the diagnostic mammograms. So it can get a little confusing.
The new legislation requires Arkansas insurance companies to cover these diagnostic procedures just like they cover screening mammograms. Dana Greer, clinical breast radiologist at the Breast Center, says the earlier a cancer is detected, the better it is for the patient's survivability and the treatment they will undergo.
We need to just be able to find it early, because it's not like you get breast cancer because you smoked or, you know, did something bad. It's not really lifestyle dependent. It's much more just hereditary and being female and getting older.
According to a Susan G. Komen commissioned study, the out-of-pocket cost for patients can be high, and there is a lot of variation for diagnostic breast imaging. The study found the average patient cost for a mammogram is $234, while a breast MRI cost $1,021. Because of the high cost, Greer says sometimes patients don't admit to having an issue when making their appointment to ensure they're scheduled for a screening mammogram, which is covered by insurance, instead of a diagnostic mammogram, which is not.
They say, "I don't have a problem," and hide the fact that they have a lump, which puts us at a disadvantage and is bad for them because we don't necessarily get to the bottom of their problem. You know, women are really creative. And so we have women that hop from one breast imaging center to another. It's crazy. They'll say, "Well, if I go somewhere else, they won't know that I have a problem or I have a follow-up scheduled, and I could just schedule it as a screening mammogram." So in general, it just leads to really bad care.
Under the new law, insurance companies will have to cover the diagnostic procedures without any out-of-pocket expense to the patient, which Greer says is huge.
The diagnostic part of it has become harder because healthcare has become more expensive, and the deductibles have gone higher. And so there's just a bigger portion that patients, there's a bigger out-of-pocket expense for patients for those diagnostic services.
In addition to helping Arkansans detect breast cancer early, Marquette says the expansion of insurance benefits is also helpful for breast cancer survivors who must regularly undergo diagnostic procedures.
For them, they will have to do those additional testings every year, sometimes depending on your treatment, your diagnosis, or if you're high risk, you might be doing some of this twice a year. Every 6 months, you're doing these extra. So, I mean, it really is expensive for a lot of women. So this is for, you know, all women really that are going through that are in the age group of getting mammograms and screening, but especially for breast cancer survivors, this is really important.
Bill sponsor Senator Greg Letting says the new law will take effect 90 days after lawmakers recess. The legislature has been extended until April 30th. According to the American Cancer Society, there will be an estimated 2,370 new cases of breast cancer in Arkansas this year and 400 deaths. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Local tourism officials are concerned about the impact the state's recent stream of legislation that LGBTQ advocates say targets transgender people will have on the state's second largest industry. On yesterday's show, we heard from cyclists who, as professional and amateur athletes, are calling for a boycott or change of venue for several national and international level events scheduled to take place in Fayetteville through January. One of those events, the U.S. Cup, began today. In part two of our report, Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek speaks with tourism officials and event organizers about the challenges they're facing as Arkansas lawmakers continue to pass bills they say are discriminatory and regressive.
The last year has been tough on the tourism industry in the state. And Molly Ron, the CEO of Experience Fayetteville, says the legislation coming out of Little Rock is not making it any easier.
There is no good time for legislation like this. Let me be clear. There is never a time in which this is not damaging and not harmful. It is particularly so after the year we've had.
On March 31st, the Convention and Visitors Bureau released a statement expressing disappointment with the passing of discriminatory legislation that harms Arkansas's LGBTQ community. At that time, Governor Asa Hutchinson had just signed SB 354, or the Fairness in Women's Sports Act, which bans trans women and girls from participating in publicly funded schools and college sports unless they're participating in the men's and boys' categories. The statement from Experience Fayetteville goes on to say, quote, "In the days since the passage of SB 354, we have seen calls for boycotts of some of Fayetteville's most high-profile sporting events. These boycotts have the potential to cost our state and city hundreds of millions of dollars in lost tourism revenue. These laws will further drive negative stereotypes of our state as being regressive and repressive." And while Ron says the statement was coming from an economic perspective, she believes the legislation is wrong on every level.
We are the organization responsible for economic development through tourism for the city of Fayetteville. And so my job is to let people know when something is going to have a negative impact on tourism. And that does not mean that I don't personally, and as a human, Molly Ron, the human being, recognize and understand. Let me take that back. I can never fully understand, how painful this must be for a transgender individual, but I certainly recognize that it is.
Ron says it's not unusual for Experience Fayetteville to get occasional emails from travelers who say they will not be visiting the state because of something the state legislature is doing.
It isn't necessarily alarming to have, a handful of those emails. What is alarming is when you have calls for boycotts from national and international athletes saying that they are pulling their organized travel from the state. And so what I mean by that is when you have entire teams that are saying, we are not going to come and participate in this race, or, we are not going to come participate in this event.
And Ron says there's a precedent for it. Just recently, Major League Baseball announced it would be moving its All-Star game from Atlanta to Denver after Georgia's governor signed a controversial voting bill that critics say is aimed at suppressing votes among people of color in response to the results of last year's elections. Ron says SB 354 may not directly impact the athletes participating in any of the racing events coming to Fayetteville, but it makes building an inclusive cycling destination a lot harder.
We are being very naive if we say that this doesn't impact. It impacts our state's reputation, and it impacts whether or not people want to spend their dollars here.
And Ron adds, the consequences of bills like SB 354 are not an abstraction. They have a potential to cost jobs.
There may be people that say, that's okay. I'm okay with that. I mean, there may be people that say, it is worth it to me because they believe somehow that these bills are not damaging or they think that the fallout isn't significant. And, they are entitled to that opinion. What I want them to understand is that there is a cost of very real harm that comes with that, both real harm to the transgender community and real harm, what we are speaking about specifically as tourism professionals, real harm to our industry.
Athletes are not the only ones who might boycott the events. The editor-in-chief of Cycling Tips, a web publication started in 2008, announced via Twitter she would not send reporters to cover the UCI Cyclocross World Championships that are going to be held in Fayetteville in January if Arkansas banned trans youth from being able to access gender-affirming healthcare. The governor vetoed the bill that would have created the Save Adolescents from Experimentation Act on Monday, but the Republican-led legislature quickly overturned his veto the next day. Ron says sponsors and vendors can pull their support for events, too.
For some of these events, losing a sponsor, losing a $5,000 sponsor is extremely significant. So it is not just the athletes. It is the industry that goes along to support that, right? So whether that be corporate sponsors or event promoters looking to bring another event here, it is problematic. And cycling is where we felt that risk most immediately.
While she doesn't speak for every Fayetteville resident's values, Ron says it's been particularly hard to see the impact of state legislation on a city that is represented by lawmakers who have consistently voted against bills they believe wrongly target Arkansas's trans community.
So, yes, to some extent, there is a part of us that wants to say, oh, don't throw Fayetteville under the bus. But yet, who am I to tell someone who is injured by this to not do that? I understand the perspective that they're coming from. We are in Arkansas, and as a lifelong Arkansan and someone who loves so much about this state, it's heartbreaking.
Ron says she's grateful and relieved that so far the cycling events that had been scheduled are going ahead as planned.
We have so much to offer here in Fayetteville and here in Northwest Arkansas and here in our state. It is a wonderful place to visit. And so my message is, to people that are calling on boycotts or who are individually choosing not to attend. I guess my perhaps surprising answer is, I'm sorry, and I understand.
We also contacted Bike Bentonville, which is part of Visit Bentonville, for comment after the city recently announced it was the mountain biking capital of the world. In a statement, President Kayleen Griffith said, quote, "We're committed to inclusive trail and visitor experiences in our city and welcome everyone to Visit Bentonville." None of the cycling events taking place in Northwest Arkansas are organized by USA Cycling or USAC, but many of them are sanctioned by the governing body.
So USA Cycling is the national governing body for cycling in the U.S. We oversee six disciplines. Five of them are Olympic disciplines.
That's USA Cycling president and CEO Rob DeMartini.
First of all, USA Cycling believes that cycling is for everybody. And we have a position that we champion cycling, and we want to make sure that everybody has access. All of our membership products and all of our racing events, 2,500 sanctioned events and 20 national championships, are available to everybody. We don't support nor endorse any of the law that has recently been passed in Arkansas and recently passed in Tennessee and sits in front of 18 other states. I'm proud of the position that we have taken so far, but I also recognize this is a developing societal issue that needs constant kind of review and support.
DeMartini says USA Cycling takes a two-tiered approach to the rules that allow trans athletes to race in the categories that align with their gender identity.
To get super technical with you, if you're Cat 3 or below, you can compete in the gender you identify with, kind of no questions asked. If you're a top-level athlete in the elite category, consistent with both the U.S. Olympic Committee and the International Olympic Committee, we have a very clear protocols that have been in place for 4 to 5 years. They're testosterone level based tests that athletes take if they choose to, and that's worked fairly well. So it has protected the fairness of competition, and it has given full access to trans athletes in all of our events.
On International Trans Day of Visibility, which is held each year on March 31st, USA Cycling announced it would be holding a series of roundtables in response to the legislation passed in Arkansas and other states, and the reaction that's gotten from professional and amateur cyclists. DeMartini says the goal of the discussions is to give athletes the opportunity to share their opinions and concerns.
You know, it's easy for folks outside, well, it's easy for anybody to say, just simply boycott the event. I personally am not a fan of that because I don't feel like we're in the position to make that decision for other athletes. We will fully support athletes that choose to not participate and protect them in our community, but we're not going to make that decision for them. Again, we don't support this legislation at all, and we're going to do everything we can to ensure that our events stay open and available to all athletes.
And while DeMartini says USA Cycling will listen to its members, the UCI Cyclocross World Championships were awarded to Fayetteville nearly 3 years ago, well before any legislation like SB 354 was passed.
Picking up and moving a world championship, number one, it's not our authority to do that. It's a UCI event. We can lobby for that, and we have and will continue to do that.
But he adds Arkansas is only one of several dozen states passing laws that target the transgender community.
And so my hope is they don't take the path that Arkansas does, but I'm not sure that boycotting is a productive exercise. I'd rather have our organization be involved in the discussion with our members and involved with the discussion with the legislators to try to get a better outcome.
Especially as the sport and industry of cycling reckons with its own lack of diversity, equity, and inclusion in the wake of the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
It certainly has, I think unintentionally, been a bit of an exclusion, kind of an exclusive sport, mostly because there isn't broad infrastructure at the youth level to introduce kids to the sport. Too many of our top athletes come from cycling families, and that's not a bad thing. But it's just not inclusive. We've been working very hard with diverse groups across this country to bring them into cycling, and we will continue to do that.
DeMartini says USA Cycling will also continue to advocate for a sport that's open, available, accessible, fair, and equitable.
Our current policies do that. You know, there was a question of will we aim for states that don't have this legislation for future events? Yeah, absolutely we will. But I think we also need to be prepared for, you know, if it's in place in more states, how are we going to deal with it?
Prior to the UCI Cyclocross World Championships, Fayetteville is also hosting two back-to-back weekends of mountain bike racing that started today. Ty Cady is the event director of US Cup, which is an Olympic qualifier that will be attended by hundreds of professional athletes. We reached Cady on Wednesday while he was out on the race course at Centennial Park.
So the U.S. Cup is just a mountain bike series, and we kind of specify in higher-end UCI Olympic-style racing. and as well as like amateur cross-country racing.
Like others, Katie released a statement on behalf of the U.S. Cup earlier this week, which he started by apologizing for the organization's delayed response to the bills getting passed in Arkansas. He goes on to say, quote, "We didn't want to speak for a community we are not a part of. We wanted to listen and learn. At the moment, the U.S. Cup is actively engaging members of the LGBTQ community to get educated and work together on an action plan for the future."
We were really trying to understand the legislation because there was some information going around there that basically, for the lack of better knowledge, is anyone from the LGBTQ community that was participating with us, that they could be denied just general emergency care. And so that created anxiety in some of our racers. Like, if I crash at your event and I get, you know, go into a hospital in town, are they going to be able to turn me away under the right of consciousness?
Katie is talking about the Medical Ethics and Diversity Act, which was also signed into law by Governor Hutchinson. The measure allows healthcare providers to refuse to give care to a patient on moral and religious grounds, except in an emergency situation. Katie met with the event medical team, hospital, and Fayetteville mayor on the matter and says he wants to make it abundantly clear to LGBTQ racers they are safe to take part in the U.S. Cup.
So I don't want to get into the murky depths of politics, but basic inalienable human rights should be across the board. It shouldn't even be debatable. And so, you know, giving someone, denying someone service based on their gender or their sex or their race or their identity is just absolutely ridiculous. And we're not going to stand for that. So it's important that we got that message out and that the safety of our athletes was number one for us.
Katie says organizing events, the scale of the U.S. Cup, is no easy feat under normal circumstances. And the recent cascade of controversial bills hasn't helped.
Yeah, it's a lose-lose-lose all the way around. And if you want some background, the reason we are in Arkansas is that these Olympic qualifiers last year were shut down when COVID hit. We literally had these two Olympic qualifiers, these HCs in California, because we're California-based. We were shut down by the governing bodies on our March 15th race, and then obviously nothing came back in line.
At the same time, Katie had been doing consulting work on the race courses that have been built at Centennial Park, so he suggested moving the events to Fayetteville.
We didn't know the storm that was lurking in summer, and we didn't even know the storm that was lurking a week or two ago. So it's very complicated sometimes, you know, trying to organize events, and these last 2 years have been very trying, to be honest.
But he says he understands if participants want to boycott the event.
You want to voice your support in terms of boycotting our event, we encourage you to do so. We understand that you're right. And then if you want to come, you know, still race with us and have a great time and come, you know, come have some fun, we're encouraging you to do that. So we've really got an open door policy for anyone. And that's kind of how we view it.
Richard Gathright with NWA Equality says right now the organization, which serves as an education, advocacy, resource, and service to Northwest Arkansas's LGBTQ community, is urging against a boycott of the cycling events taking place in the area.
Right now, we're not suggesting boycotts for cyclocross or for Fayetteville businesses. We understand this negative impact that it has on the state, the city, and residents of the area. And Arkansas conservative legislatures just don't seem to care about that. The majority of businesses in Fayetteville are supportive of the LGBTQ community.
But Gathright says that stance isn't easy to take, given how the LGBTQ community is feeling in this moment.
I think right now the kind of overall general feeling in the community is defeated and sad and angry and kind of at a loss for, you know, what to do next after we've just been hit with sucker punch after sucker punch after sucker punch over the past few weeks.
He suggests instead of boycotting the events in Fayetteville, participants should donate to groups that will be challenging Arkansas's legislation in court.
ACLU and HRC in particular are your two best groups to donate to right now. Obviously, NWA Equality, Intransitive in Little Rock. Those are kind of your best bets to do right now, just because it's going to take some time for these to fight through court. And unfortunately, that costs money. And it's also going to be a huge drain on taxpayer money for the state to defend these horrible bills.
Gathright also recommends calling lawmakers.
You know, these out-of-state groups like the Family Research Council and others that are really the ones fueling these fires in Little Rock, you know, have found a, you know, somewhat of a gullible electorate in Arkansas that buys this. And, you know, here we are.
Especially since the Save Adolescents from Experimentation Act has a direct Northwest Arkansas connection. It was lead sponsored by Republican Representative Robin Lundstrom of Springdale. Gathright says he sees the bills as a kind of retaliation after Republicans lost both the presidency and seats in the Senate on a national scale.
You know, it's just disheartening because Fayetteville really has tried to be on the forefront of equality on many different levels for years. And it just seems the state legislature consistently gets in our way and makes things hard for, you know, not just, you know, the city of Fayetteville, but for thousands of people in Arkansas.
Since the Arkansas legislature voted to extend its legislative session to the end of the month, lawmakers will consider a number of other bills aimed at the state's trans population. Yesterday, the House passed House Bill 1749, which prohibits requiring public school and state-funded institutions of higher education employees from addressing a student by a pronoun, title, or other word that is used to identify the student as male or female if it's inconsistent with the student's biological sex. The measure now heads to the Senate Education Committee. And earlier this week, Republican Representative Cindy Crawford of Fort Smith introduced a so-called bathroom bill, which prohibits people from using restrooms and other facilities that are not consistent with their sex. Molly Ron with Experience Fayetteville says she will continue to work with the state's tourism sector to let lawmakers and the governor know how harmful such legislation is to the state's second largest industry.
I do not think that our industry as a whole, statewide, has sufficiently spread the message to let you all know the damage this will have on the hospitality and tourism industry. We have seen the tourism industry at a statewide level mobilize before, and we have seen that be effective. We saw that two sessions ago when we were able to defeat a potential bathroom bill in Arkansas. That didn't happen. And one of the large reasons that didn't happen is because the tourism and hospitality industry banded together. We stood up and we spoke out.
Ron says lawmakers don't seem to be listening, but it also feels like the tourism industry isn't talking enough about the impact of these bills on people's lives.
And I think there is certainly room for all different political persuasions and identities in the tourism industry. I think when you start talking about attacking people's basic human rights, that is nonpartisan. That is not a red or a blue issue to me. That is a, it just isn't. So yes, it would be nice to have other tourism professionals speaking about this. Yes.
This week, both the Northwest Arkansas Council, which is a regional economic development nonprofit, and the Walton Family Foundation, which just announced diversity, equity, and inclusion, will play a central role in the organization's work in the next 5 years, issued statements following the governor's veto of the Save Adolescents from Experimentation Act. Northwest Arkansas Council President and CEO Nelson Peacock writes, quote, "The recent string of discriminatory legislation in Arkansas unfairly impacts the LGBTQ community by restricting rights and limiting access to health care. These bills do not advance Arkansas's interest or reflect our shared values and commitments to creating inclusive communities where people can live, work, and thrive." Peacock goes on to say the bills will also hinder the state's ability to attract and retain economic investment that comes from corporate talent, tourism, and entrepreneurship. Walmart Air and Home Region Program Committee Chair Tom Walton issued a statement on behalf of the Walton Family Foundation. He writes, quote, "Our nation was built on inalienable rights and strengthened by individual differences. Arkansas has been called the land of opportunity because it's a place where anyone can think big and achieve the extraordinary. Any policy that limits individual opportunity also limits our state's potential." For Ozarks at Large, I'm Zuzana Sitek.
Concerns have also been expressed about what the state's legislation could mean for girls who participate in cycling through the Arkansas chapter of the National Interscholastic Cycling Association, which operates teams within schools. NICA's national president told the website Singletracks he doesn't have a clear answer at this point, but the organization plans to support its trans athletes under the policy it's had in place since 2015. And we have reached out to Republican Representative Robin Lundstrom to get her reaction to the calls for boycotts and the concerns of tourism officials. We look forward to broadcasting that conversation when it's available. This is Ozarks at Large.
That's guitarist Grant Green in the background, and I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz. We'll hear more from Grant Green, as well as Charlie Parker, Johnny Griffin, Ella Fitzgerald, Hogtown, Hot Club, Cannonball Adderley, and more. Tune in to Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday right here on KUAF.
This is Ozarks at Large. Millions more U.S. veterans not eligible for enrollment in the VA's medical care system will now be able to access no-cost COVID-19 vaccinations administered by the Department of Veterans Affairs under the new Strengthening and Amplifying Vaccination Efforts to Locally Immunize All Veterans and Every Spouse Act, or Save Lives Act. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
The Veterans Healthcare System of the Ozarks, or VHSO for short, in Fayetteville immediately responded to the COVID-19 pandemic declaration last March by taking precautionary and protective measures, deploying testing, providing critical care to infected veterans, and offering vaccinations at no cost to all enrolled veterans in mandated phases. Calvin Parks serves as medical director.
So we have two different opportunities for them. First is scheduled appointments. So we're working around the clock to schedule veterans at all of our sites of care to include the Missouri, Oklahoma, and here in Arkansas. And we just started within the last 2 weeks that all veterans are eligible for the vaccine.
Again, he's referring to VA-enrolled veterans. But now all veterans, certain spouses, and caregivers are eligible to receive free COVID-19 vaccines through the Department of Veterans Affairs under a measure signed into law by President Biden March 24th. The bill, titled the Save Lives Act, was introduced by U.S. Senator John Bozeman, a Republican from Arkansas, and Senate Veterans Affairs Committee Chairman John Tester, a Democrat from Montana. The new law will expand COVID-19 vaccination eligibility from 9 million veterans to 33 million, according to the VA.
Yes, so as you stated, Congress passed a new law that allows us to soon after be able to provide COVID vaccines to our veterans and some spouses and caregivers. In fact, the new law states that that expanding vaccinations is contingent upon us having adequate supply of the vaccine. So we're working diligently now to put those processes in effect here within our healthcare system. So we're working with the CDC, the VHA, and our local region to ensure that we're able to move out smartly on that.
Park says veterans not enrolled who show up for vaccines will be screened by staff for VA benefits eligibility,
so that we can offer that care to them as well. And that's our ultimate goal, is to ensure that every veteran within our catchment or within our region receives the not just the COVID vaccine, but the other care and benefits that they so rightly deserve.
16% of eligible Americans are now fully vaccinated, according to CDC, including nearly 12% of Arkansans. Park says over 10,000 VHSO enrolled veterans have been vaccinated so far, with twice that number vaccinated within the Little Rock VA system. Since a pandemic was declared, VHSO has cared for 160 veterans at its inpatient COVID unit. The unit presently has no patients, as new positive cases decline across the U.S. and Arkansas. VHSO is also transitioning back to normal operations, he says.
Aligned with the changes that you see within the state of Arkansas. In fact, today, for the last 2 weeks, we have not had any COVID inpatients within our healthcare system and no positive employees at this time. We're currently at what we call phase three, where we're operating at about 75% capacity. And within the next 30 days or so, we'll be at full capacity.
renewing elective procedures, he says, and although a mask mandate is expected to be lifted in Arkansas by the governor, barring any new outbreaks, the VA has to comply with the mask mandate issued by President Biden for all federal facilities, he says. A pilot Save Lives Act program is expected to deploy in the coming weeks at VA medical centers across the U.S., but Dr. Calvin Parks encourages all eligible vets to come get their shots.
So right now we have a drive-through clinic, and that's in our primary care entrance here on the Fayetteville campus, and that's Monday through Friday, weekly, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. We have walk-in clinics in Building 21, which is our lab area, on Saturdays from 10 a.m. To 2 p.m.
A mass vaccination drive-through clinic for veterans is scheduled Saturday, April 3rd from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the J.B. Hunt Corporate Headquarters parking lot in Lowell. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
With me on the phone from her home office in Bella Vista is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Becca, welcome back to Ozarks at Large.
I have a really important question, Kyle.
I hope I can answer it.
I haven't seen you for 13 months.
Not that we're counting, but if I do some quick math in my head, it's about 398 days.
So my question is,
yes.
Do you still have hair?
Yes.
Have you gotten really round?
No.
You know, what's happened in the last 398 days?
New glasses. I think I'm the same height.
Okay.
Roughly the same weight. I am not a creature that changes that much. I have a new car.
But when I see you, I'll recognize you.
I think so.
We have a bunch of music to talk about.
That, and this is music
real
you can
life,
go see?
Honest-to-God music. Starting with, okay, I had to get my theater in here somewhere. The Walton Arts Center has a show coming up called A Natural State of Mind from New York to Arkansas. It's happening next weekend on the 17th,
mm-hmm.
and it brings together actors Aaron LaCroix and John Riddle, who have played Christine and Raoul in The Phantom of the Opera.
And is this just for Walton Arts Center?
Yes.
Wow.
And they were actually performing. They were the only show performing on Broadway the day Broadway went dark.
Mm.
They had a Thursday matinee. And then they got word that, well, they're shutting down Broadway at 5 o'clock. So they took their final bow at 4:30, had a company meeting, and that was that. She is from Oklahoma City, or at least went to Oklahoma City University. So that's what they're doing in Fayetteville.
I see.
And they're going to sing music from the show and talk about their careers and talk about performing on Broadway. And if you're a theater lover, it ought to be really quite amazing. This is at 2 and 7 p.m. on the 17th. Limited tickets remaining, starting at $19. You can find out more at waltonartcenter.org. And Jocelyn Murphy has a podcast talking to Aaron LaCroix at nwaonline.com/podcast.
Okay.
Live at Turnbow is going to be a bigger deal than ever in Springdale this summer. They've only announced one show so far. It's April 29th at 6 with Jeff Harp, Kaylin Fay, and Dylan Earle. But they'll have a whole summer of concerts in that little space off of Emma Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all free. So watch for more of that. Gully Park is back. I can't remember before the Gully Park summer concert series. Well, of course I can't because it's been 25 years.
Right.
They'll have six shows. They haven't announced the musicians yet, but the shows are June 24th, July 1st, July 8th, July 15th, July 22nd, and July 29th. 7 to 9 o'clock on Thursdays. Those two are free, and I'm sure they'll have food trucks and fun stuff, too. And then the Walton Arts Center continues. It's In the Atrium series, which my daughter and I are loving.
Also free.
We're doing the Sunday afternoon shows. They're doing Friday nights and Saturday nights, different kinds of music. Like April 15th is Hogtown Hot Club. April 16th is the Mike Sumbler Project. April 29th is Comedy in the Atrium. May 1st, Still on the Hill is doing their new show, Words on Birds. Mm. But the Sunday afternoon shows are all classical. This Sunday afternoon is a duo called Duo Capriccioso. Please let me not mispronounce all of these because I've been practicing. It's a husband and wife who are from Honduras. They both teach at Pittsburgh State University up the road in Kansas.
Home of the gorillas.
And they're home of the gorillas. And they are going to be doing their show, Latin Tones, in a bilingual format.
Cool.
At 2 o'clock this coming Sunday.
So that's the day after tomorrow.
Yes,
okay.
That one.
Gotcha.
These are all part of the Sona Voices series, too, that are
right.
Sona musicians doing intimate shows while we wait for the full orchestra. And there's also one on May 16th at Mount Sequoia featuring Teresa Della playing music for oboe and strings. And that one is at 6 o'clock and tickets are $10 per person or $40 for a pod. And then there will be other music on the mountain at Mount Sequoia. April 16th is Dylan Earle. April 22nd is the Alicia Patillo Quartet. Mm-hmm. April 23rd is the Cocktail Club. April 25th is Randall Shreve. May 1st is Mike Sumler Project. May 7th is Willie Carlisle. And May 8th is Route 358. So there's a ton of music coming up. And also coming up, another sign of spring and normalcy and joy, the Bentonville Farmers Market opens tomorrow.
Right. Now, they have, as you would expect, some protocols in place. Tents are at least 10 feet apart. Vendors will be masked. 4 separate entries on only one side of the street for most of it, but it's back. All right, Becca Martin Brown is features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Becca, thank you very much. Have a great, restful, safe weekend. We'll talk to you next Friday.
I'll be here.
Washington Regional Her Health Clinic provides personalized care for women by women, including wellness visits, prenatal care, deliveries, and more. Located in the Washington Regional Women and Infant Center in Fayetteville, WRegional.com/herhealth for services, providers, and appointments.
And this is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Lead Hill. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Contributors to our program this Friday included Antoinette Grajeda, Zuzanna Sitek, and Jacqueline Froelich. Our thank yous to Becca Martin Brown, the features editor with the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and Michael Tilley with Talk Business and Politics for being part of our program. Timothy Dennis produced today's show. Our theme is written and performed by Daryl Sean. If you ever miss an edition of Ozarks at Large or would like to hear a show again, well, there are options. You can subscribe to our absolutely free podcast. It is available at all of the major podcast distributors. You can also ask your smart speaker to please play Ozarks at Large, and it will play the most recent daily edition of our show. And you can always go to our website, ozarksatlarge.com. There are complete past episodes as well as individual pieces from those episodes, including links that will allow you to share those stories, interviews, and shows with people you think should hear them as well. And you can subscribe to the Ozarks at Large daily email newsletter. It comes to you every Monday through Friday with the content that was on the show and more. It's free. You can sign up by looking for it at KUAF.com. We will return Sunday morning at 9 for the next edition of Weekend Ozarks at Large. And we will be back Monday at noon and 7 p.m. to start a brand new week of daily editions of Ozarks at Large. Thanks so much, everybody who contributed, by the way, last week during our on-air fundraiser and for helping us meet that goal. We continue to thank you very much for that. If you didn't get a chance to contribute, you can do so right now or at any time of day at supportkuaf.com. From the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio at the Carver Center for Public Radio, I'm Kyle Kellums. Stay well.